Hi there, this is Wes Moss from Money Matters, and I know that this is one of these times where you're looking for some advice and some direction, and today's really an investor's guide or a retiree's guide, but really we're all investors in America, a three-step guide to surviving this market crash, and it is coronavirus induced, and there are a lot of questions out there. And we have been on our team way out front with doing our own research and talking to epidemiologists and virologists and infectious disease doctors and economists and market strategists, which is what we are, to try to put all these pieces together to help you figure out where we go from here, because I know it's a scary time for investors. You see the markets drop 1,000 points and then go up 1,000 and then drop 2,000 points and then rally and then drop another 2,000 points in a really compact or compressed period of time. I know that it's nerve-wracking and it's gut-wrenching. Even for the most stoic investors, when we go through these periods of time, it's a tough time for most people, particularly if you're in retirement. I think if you're 35 and you're in your 401k and you have a 30-year, 40-year horizon, I think it's a lot easier to drive through this pain. But if you're in retirement, you're sitting here saying, Wes, what do I do? And I have three really important pieces of information as really think of this as that these are investment thoughts and almost behavioral thoughts to get you through this. And these are some of the things that I'm relying on, that I'm talking to the families that we work with every day, that they're relying on to get us through this arguably rough period of time. So here are the three things, and I'm gonna go into each one of them. The first one is we have to face the reality and face the facts of today. And we have been out front with the facts, and I want to bring this to you now. Again, facing reality is a big part of solving a problem. Number two is that we all need a bridge of dry powder. So we know that, so that's number two, a bridge for this very difficult time that we're just entering now. And I don't mean just the stock market, but also the economy, because we have a real dislocation here in the economy with events shutting down. There's a period of time that will get better, but until then, we need a financial bridge to get there. Both physically, I need something I can count on that is there, and mentally to get through this. And then number three is to discuss recovery. And how do we get out of this? And what is the worst case scenario? And where am I finding out this worst case scenario? And I'm gonna give you some interesting thoughts from an epidemiology side. And talking to doctors at Johns Hopkins, at retired doctors from the CDC, that brings some real truth and insight at all these things. So number one, we're gonna face the facts, and I'm gonna talk about that. Number two, the bridge to getting to bridge of dry powder, and three, the recovery and how we get through this. So let me start with that. And again, I don't even know what platform you're watching this on, but I know that it's helpful to like these videos and press like and heart or whatever that is and share, forward this to your friends, because there is an enormous amount of dislocation of information, and it has been from the very start of this. So number one, about let's get you the reality of what's happening. The reality here is that COVID-19 coronavirus is something that it's already here in the United States. You know, we already know famous people like Tom Hanks that have it. It's not a scenario where, and we've talked about this now for weeks, that epidemiologists will tell you, infectious disease doctors, is that it's been here for probably, arguably since November, December, it really showed up first in China, but it's arguably been here for quite some time. And we are going to take measures to contain this. I'm going to talk about that in a second. But the reality here is that it's here, and it's going to be 20 to minimum. And this is consensus from Dr. Amish Adolja from Johns Hopkins. He is a senior fellow infectious disease and leading scholar on this, and several sources I have at the CDC and other doctors at public health institutions that agree. That number one, the bad news is, this is the reality. If you've thought, oh, this is no big deal, here's the reality. We have a virus that we don't have a cure for at this point, or vaccine just yet, that has likely been in the United States percolating for quite some time, and that 20 up to 40 or 50% of the population will get this. And that is just the reality from any doctor that you talk to that isn't trying to sugarcoat. So to some extent, that's the bad news. But there's a couple of other thoughts. I've talked a lot about, in the beginning of this crisis, I was very quick to try to figure out and debunk what I thought was a severity bias in a lot of the big health organizations saying this is killing X amount of people, killing X amount of people. The mortality rate was 3%, 3 to 4%. Then I started talking to doctors, epidemiologists about this that made a very strong case, and now this has become consensus. Again, we've been talking about this for quite some time, that the mortality rate was much, much lower than most people think. Problem is, initially this is communicated as, oh, no big deal, it's a lot like the flu. Well, not really. The reality here is the mortality rate is gonna likely be somewhere between a little less than 1% and maybe all the way down to 0.2 or 0.3 of a percent when this all shakes out. And that is getting widely agreed upon. Where are scientists getting that? They're looking at the South Korea numbers. South Korea is a modern healthcare system. They've tested 200,000 some people. They've got around 8,000 people that have gotten the coronavirus. And then they have a death rate of, call it 40, 50 people, which you do the math on that. Now what we're seeing is a mortality rate that is sub 1%, 0.7, 0.8%. The problem is that's what everyone's been talking about is the death rate and the kill rate and how bad this is relative to the flu. I think if we were to rewind 6 weeks and restart this entire information process, I think what would be really helpful to know for you and for me and my family and the families we work with is that this has it's bad that we have it and we're faced with it and a lot of people in America are going to get it. 50 million, 100 million, 150 million are the estimates. Widespread. The good news, though, is that 99.5% of people, 99.5, 99.7, 99.8% of people in our modern healthcare system will survive this. And we've been talking about death rates and kill rates and mortality rates, and it has really created a panic. Now, it's a good thing that we've had a heightened awareness of this, and maybe a little panic in the early goings here allowed us to really face reality. And the reality is this is going to be very widespread. There's no way to contain something that is flu-based. It's here in the United States. You can shut the borders down all you want, but it's already here. But the reality is that 99.5%, 99.7, 99.8% of people will very likely, if you get it, be able to make a full recovery. And looking at the numbers from Dr. Amish Adalja, I've talked to about the South Korea numbers, which are a really good indication of where this thing is headed. Right, so what can you do? Obviously, you've heard a million times, wash your hands, don't touch your face, great. Social distancing means that even though this is not something that is airborne, as in the measles where you breathe it out and somebody a mile away can pick it up, it's airborne in the sense that if my five-year-old gets this and sneezes directly in my face or coughs right on me, then technically that is through the air, but it's really because you're getting hit by droplets and by virus. The reality here is that if we're smart about not being in tight crowds, and this is why people have canceled close events, is that this is a droplet-based spread, so it comes out of somebody that has it, it sits somewhere, with gravity, the droplets fall, then you touch it, then you touch your face, your eyes, your mouth, and that's how you contract this, how it spreads. So the good news is it's well believed and it is well consensus through the medical profession that this is not a floating particle in the air for hours and hours like something like a measles. So that's good news. So we actually do have some control here. We can wash our hands, not touch our face, use hand sanitizer. But the social distancing of working from home potentially, for if you can do that, the being able to be smart about not going to big crowds until we get this worked out, which I'm going to talk about in a second, those measures actually make a lot of sense. And you'll start to hear something called flatten the curve. Well, the reality here is that this, any sort of pandemic, flu-like pandemic, can hit a population. And if everybody gets it right away, it doesn't necessarily mean the mortality rate is any better or worse. What it means is that it takes a real stress on the hospital system, which in turn could make it so less people survive. That has to do with if we're smart about washing our hands, covering our faces, our coughs, or using masks if we are sick, then what happens here is that we flatten the curve. So instead of this huge upswing, we end up having a much steadier part of the population that gets this. That way, our healthcare workers can do a better job of taking care of more people as opposed to one big stampede of people getting sick at one time. So that I really truly believe that's the reality of all of this. And we just have to understand that we're going to be faced with these social containments, which means it's going to be a rough economy for a while. So that's kind of number two. How do we bridge the gap in a rough economy? So if we're smart about slowing down the spread, even though it's going to be 20 to 50% of the population over time, over the course of the next year, we're going to have a really, really, really high survival rate, 99.5%, very likely, and could be even more than that. But at some point in the next, call it in the days and weeks, we're going to be faced as Americans with having to stay home, and our kids may be home from school, or very likely are going to be home. We've already seen multiple schools and universities say, look, out, go back home, we're learning online. We've seen the NBA, the NHL, the MLS. We've seen March Madness, the NCAA tournament. I mean, nothing that gets canceled anymore that it will shock us. So we've got to just prepare for an economy that goes into a shutdown mode for at least a little bit of time. During that time, and maybe it's a month and maybe it's 6 months, but during that period of time, and by the way, there is plenty of good news that will come forward, and we're going to talk about that in just a second. But during that period of time, you need to financially be able to bridge that period of time. Create a bridge of, hey, if I'm not making money for a month or 2 months, what are your resources to be able to pay the bills? Do you have a credit card or a credit line or a home equity line? Guess what? Probably a good time to make sure that is tapped and you've got dry powder. If you're an investor and you've got, whether your portfolio is $100,000 or $3 million, if you've got 30% of it or 50% of it that is in something like bonds or just treasuries or cash, well, guess what? If that portion you can live on and you're not worried about the stock market or the Dow Jones going up and down and up and down. The reality here is that that dry powder that's enough for, let's call it, the next year or so or the next several months, that dry powder is so important because it allows you to get, hey, it's peace of mind because I've got this. And now I can let my investments eventually recover. And that's the whole point of all of this, is that we're going to get a point where this dry powder allows us for our risk assets to recover. And that, I think, is so important. The government at some point, and depends on how much this market goes down, will have a response for those who don't necessarily have that dry powder, right? I understand that there are plenty of Americans that can't work from home. There's plenty of Americans that don't have lots of dry powder sitting around. That's where I think at some point, just like we saw with TARP, so 2008, 2009, the Congress had to come in essentially backstop the banks and make sure that they didn't go under. The minute they did that, we started a real economic recovery. Well, it took Congress some time to vote on TARP. And the first vote, I remember watching this on television, it failed and the market dropped another 10%. And then Congress woke up and said, well, we really do have to do something. They voted again a couple weeks later and they passed it. And that was kind of one of the bases of the recovery during the financial crisis. I think that version of fiscal help here is to make sure that those who don't have paid leave or that are hourly still have some sort of financial resources from fiscally, meaning from the government, whether it's unemployment or some sort of emergency unemployment for a 3 or 6 month period of time. Imagine how that could help bridge the gap for those Americans who don't necessarily have lots of dry powder to get through while restaurants are closed down and concerts are shut down. And that'll be a period of time. It's gonna be a period of weeks and months. And we've got to understand that this isn't a 1 or 2 day blizzard and then, oh, we dig ourselves out and everything's fine. This is going to be multiple months of trying to slow this thing down, and it's going to create some economic pain. And that's obviously why markets have sold off. Now, here's the interesting news about markets. We do know about this event, and in some respects, I think about this like 9/11, but I think 9/11 was arguably even more scary because I remember the day we were attacked, and we all remember that day. There was no end to what that could have been, right? It was, well, what if we keep getting attacked in 6 months and in 3 months and 6 months and a year and 2 years? What if we keep being, what if the siege just continues? That's a very unsettling feeling. And I remember that feeling, and we all remember that feeling. And ultimately, we took measures in America to heighten security and heighten our defense and find terrorists and vet them out or get rid of them to some extent and battle against them. But it took a long time. Here, this is an episode in our lives, meaning that we know, and here's the good news, we're going to get a recovery. And there's a couple things that'll make that recovery. In a worst case scenario, we know that if you just unleashed everybody, go back to work, no MBAs back on, MLS back, everybody's back congregating, breathing on each other, not washing their hands, what happens? Pretty much everybody gets it. 50% of America gets COVID-19. Well, what happens? Well, 99.5% of people survive it. Now, you're going to say, Wes, you're crazy. That's a terrible toll. It is. I know that. But what happens is then we get something called herd immunity, meaning that the population now all of a sudden is immune to the next time it comes around. And that's how these viruses can die out. That's how they do die out. The reality here is that if you'll remember back 50 years ago, we had things called we had chicken pox parties. Chicken pox party was, hey, everyone's going to kind of get this, so let's get it over with. Let's get your kids together. Brothers, hey, your brother has chicken pox. Hey, little Johnny, now you play with your brother, your sister, and now you're going to both get, you're all going to get chicken pox and it's over. And now everybody has immunity to that. Now, the bad news is that 1 out of 1,000 kids during that process had some sort of serious complication that wasn't good. And it's the same thing here. But we know the worst case scenario is that everybody gets it, 99.5% of people survive, and then we have herd immunity and it recedes quickly. Also, by the way, during that period of time, there'll be a vaccine. In fact, I just saw something today from Dr. Fauci, who's arguably been one of the most rational voices in this whole crisis, says that we're going to already start testing coronavirus vaccine on patients literally in the next several days. That is something that we know as a society and Americans and the genius of our medical system is going to be able to do. And we have a high degree of confidence in that. So either way, whether it's through herd immunity or through a vaccine, in a year from now, in a kind of a worst case scenario, we know we're through this. That's what makes this such an interesting period of time. We've got markets crashing and everyone panicking, yet we know there's an end to this and the sun will come out tomorrow, literally. The other thought here is that we might wake up one day, and we already know that big biotech companies, pharmaceutical companies are already testing multiple therapeutics for this. So when you get the flu, there are several different treatments, antivirals that help shorten that flu, and that's part of the reason the mortality rate in the flu is so low. It's because we have things like Tamiflu and Oneflusa, and these are antivirals that work very, very well to cut the efficacy of the virus that we face. And we've got some of the very brightest minds on the planet working on that right now. So we could wake up in a week from now, a month from now, 3 months from now, and again, this is also echoed by the doctors at Johns Hopkins, and have a very robust response to this, so that instead of having this be a full year from now, maybe as we emerge with some treatments, it's more months and several months. The other thought here, and I think this goes back to the perception, and I started the video with this, and I'm going to come back to this for a second, is that think about Americans being basically shut at home for a month, and you're not going out to restaurants. The only place you're going is to Kroger, and you're working from home. Well, what happens if now the narrative in America turns in a responsible way, now that we're washing our hands and we're practicing good public health? What if the response in America is now, and the narrative in America is, hey, this thing is really very, very much survivable. 99.5% of people survive this. Do you think all Americans are going to still just sit there and not go outdoors? Do we really think that's going to happen? Americans have such an absolute independence to them and a solidarity to them that Americans will get through this. And when the narrative changes that the world is not ending, we're going to emerge a stronger country and the economy will rebound. Now, in that interim, and I get that, the markets are crashing, my 401k, what my investment account was, what do I do? Well, A, as long as you focus in on your dry powder, that's the first and best step to do, and understand that your other assets will recover. Well, why do I say that? Well, I look at some of the big blue chip companies in America, and I'm not saying every company will recover. If you're a cruise line company and you don't get revenue for 6 months, I'm not so sure you survive. If you're a restaurant down the street and you don't get a customer for 6 months or 9 months, I'm not sure you survive. However, there are multiple massive giant institutions in the United States that are global companies that have such war chests of cash, either no debt or negative net debt, which means they might have $100 million in debt, but they have $10 billion in cash. So effectively, they could pay it off tomorrow. There are dozens and dozens, not hundreds, but dozens of really solid blue chip companies, corporations in America. That, quite frankly, I look at that as perhaps the very safest place you could possibly store your money. The very safest place. You say, Wes, what about cash? What about treasuries? Yes, that's the dry powder. But if I think about some of the biggest, bluest chip, cash-heavy, unleveraged companies that are diversified in America that do business all around the world, I look at those and I say, those are companies that they could not sell another toothbrush or Band-Aid for the next 5 years and still have zero problem paying their debt. That means they don't go out of business. It means they emerge when this economy emerges. And that's what we have to think about as investors. Once we have this planning right, we've got the dry powder, remember that the companies that you own, as long as you own high quality, the chances of them emerging from this and recovering are extraordinarily high. And that's what I have confidence in. My friends have been calling me, my clients have been calling me, my family's been calling me, Wes, when's a good time to buy? When do I buy into this market that's been falling almost on a daily basis? When do I buy? When do I know it's a good buy? The reality is I don't know when it's a good buy. What I do know is that buying something that's minus 25%, it's a lot easier to make money in than buying something that's down 1% or at an all-time high. What's even an easier way to make money? Buying something that's down 35%. What's even an easier way to make money? Buying something that's down 45%. Now, I know that's hard to do, and I know it's hard to fathom. But the reality here is that if you understand that you own quality companies in the United States that do business in a diverse way around the world and have very little or no debt, then those are the companies that will emerge when the sun comes out. And I just went through that scenario that it does come out. I think the worst case scenario is 12 months, but what happens? We know that markets recover well before everything gets better. So markets are 6 months ahead of the news cycle. So 6 months ahead of 6 months before 12 means that market may recover in 6 months. It may recover in a week or two. It may take 6 months to recover. But what we do know is that there'll be a point where asset prices get so cheap and the income that those companies pay. Think about utility companies. Think about diversified healthcare companies. Think about consumer staple type companies that have steady dividend policies that really believe in continuing to pay investors every single quarter, and they've done so for 10, 20, 30, 50 years. Those companies are going to be able to do that through this crisis. And if their stock prices drop so much that now those are 4% and 5% and 6% and 8% and 9% yielders, there will be a day where other investors say, wait a minute, that's just too good to pass up. And that's how markets find a bottom. And that's how it's called price discovery. And that happens in every single market correction cycle, bear market, recession, you name it. I have a whole separate video about market corrections and the time to break even. A quick preview though on that is that markets that go down, so corrections slash bear markets, a correction is 10%, a bear market is minus 20%, but a correction with a recession, so a market down plus a bad economy, those average minus 34%. It's a big number. It's a big negative on the down, the S&P 500. But we also know that before 2 years is even over, that whole deficit is made up on average as well. And that is what markets have done through wars. And think about just world wars. By the way, multiple pandemics that have killed millions of people, and the stock market still recovers and the economy comes back. I'll leave you with one analog too about this. And the COVID-19 maybe have less of an impact or maybe more of an impact, but I think it's a really good example. In 1957, something called the Asian flu, sounds a lot like today, hit the entire world. By the way, 1957 and 1958, after the several years of unencumbered growth after World War II, the world was hit with a really bad virus. This is just in the this is in the history books. This is real. Killed 2 million people. It killed 2 million people around the world. By the time it got to the United States in the summer of 1957, again, we're humming along, everything's great, it killed 70, 80,000 people in the United States. And back then, the population was only about 175 million people. Today, it's 335 million. So that's a really big number on a population that's half the size of what it is today. What happened to the stock market during that period of time? Well, the stock market was down 21% at its nadir and recovered from there. This crisis has already taken us below that. The GDP, that's the recession part. What about the economy, Wes? Well, the last quarter, the fourth quarter of 1957, GDP fell 4%. I wouldn't be surprised if we see GDP fall something like that in the second quarter here in the U.S. in 2020. And then the next quarter, the first quarter of 1958, GDP fell 10%. And then as the virus worked its way through and people started to get over it, the market, the GDP rebounded enormously, up almost 10% the next quarter. So it's a really good analog to what we're seeing today. I think that there's more social media. There's these videos that people watch. There's news on the left. There's news on the right. There's news quasi in the middle. You've got the White House speaking. You've got everybody is talking to you and to the American public. And no wonder everybody's so confused. This video has zero political agenda. It has only trying to draw from the facts from leading epidemiologists in the world. Again, of course, I'm not a doctorate epidemiologist, but this is information that I've gleaned from one of my main sources. You can look up Dr. Amish Adolja from the Johns Hopkins University, who's an infectious disease specialty doctor who's been out front on this in all media channels, Bloomberg, CNBC, my show, Money Matters with Wes Moss. So we're here to try to help you through this. I very much believe we get through this, even though we're going to have some rough economic times, and we already have rough market times. That'll get better. So my steps: one, just face the reality that this is a very real issue that we're going to face, and that the survival rate is 99.5% or potentially higher than that. Doesn't mean it's good. It just means that it's highly, highly survivable. And that is the message, I think, that the narrative that is going to eventually emerge through this. Number two, have a bridge of dry powder. Get through the next couple of months and know that, number three, the economy will recover, which means the stock market will recover. I can't give you a day, but I can tell you that this will happen. This is not going to put the United States under. This is not going to put the United States under. We have the brightest people in the world working on it, and we're going to get good news. And we may get more bad news before we get good news, but we will get good news, and we will come out of this. And if in the interim we have dry powder and if we're investors and you're thinking about your money, the stocks that you own, where are better places to be in the world than good blue chip companies that have tremendous balance sheets that are A, double A, triple A rated in the United States? That's where I feel super comfortable, and I have full belief that they recover. Of course, tune into Money Matters Sunday mornings on WSB Radio, 95.5 WSB, which is Atlanta's news and talk. You can find that on Alexa. Of course, if you live in Atlanta, it's 95.5 WSB. But if you're around the country, of course, you can just say, hey, Alexa, play 95.5 WSB Radio. Or you could just say, Alexa, play Money Matters with Wes Moss podcast. Just Money Matters with Wes Moss podcast. Hang in there. I know it's a tough time. It will get better. Thank you for tuning in.